Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster ready to go here with a brand new week. The last full week of August already upon us. John Couch on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. And we are ready to go with Buckmaster for this Monday, August 23rd, 2021. I was wondering, why in the world are my eyes burning so much? And then the drive in... That answered the story. The ozone alert is out there. The air quality is really bad today. So if you don't have to go outside, might be a good idea to stay inside. But if you do go outside and you can still see the Catalinas, it was pretty good over the weekend, pretty good views. Green as Hawaii, really looking good. But with the hot, hot weather again upon us, better enjoy it while we can. We are in our 11th year on the radio here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our Monday political face-off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Since 1981, this family-owned business has been providing outstanding service for Tucson residents. Not only just with the great framing they do, but they also have custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and of course, if you want Mo to come out and take care of all the hanging at your house, he'd be happy to do it. They're doing e-commerce as well. The newly redesigned website is at moesgallery.com, and if you would like to stop in, and I hope you do, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. With me in studio today are A-Team, one of our regular team of commentators. Not that our other teams aren't A-Teams as well, but John Munger and Jeff Rogers has been with us a long time here on the program. Mr. Munger, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, Republican candidate for Arizona governor in 2010, and former chair of the Republican Party in Arizona. John, how are you?
It's a great day. Wonderful day in Tucson.
A wonderful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right.
Jeff Rogers here, also well-known attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Jeff, how are you?
I'm very well. It's a nice weekend. It's nice to have a little reprieve from the rain, so my horse's stalls can at least dry out a little bit.
Did the horses, was their appetite increasing when things with the rain and the cooler weather?
Not really. They're about okay. The same all the time.
They are. They're always hungry, right? Speaking of being hungry, I will quick plug for Mona's. We were up at Mona's yesterday for breakfast, Jeff, and I know you love their hash browns. Well,
they're
I'm
delicious.
Now very much into the bacon, John. I think I could do the Mona's bacon 24/7. We had a great breakfast up there. You've always had a good breakfast up there.
I love their food.
Yeah, good food. All right. Preston Biden said he stands squarely behind his decision. After 20 years, he said he's learned the hard way that there was never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan. Team Biden, Jeff Rogers, pretty much standing behind the president in this decision. And do you think it's a big bet they're making on Afghanistan?
Not really. People don't really vote on foreign policy issues very, very frequently. It's just never at the top of voters' lists of what they're concerned about. They're concerned about things like the economy and bread and butter issues, and you know your sort of dinner table issues. So, you know, and Afghanistan is. I mean, we go all the way back to the 1850s when Britain was worried about Afghanistan having an effect on the crown jewel of their Great Britain at that time was India. And they were basically chased out of there where I think the last contingent of officers who left, every one of them died except one, finally escaped. And then we look at the Soviet Union and their attempts to take over Afghanistan and what a burden that was and what a black eye they had when they left. And of course, it was part of partly our fault because we backed Osama bin Laden and the Taliban against the Soviet Union at the time. And that was what basically created the Taliban, was sort of, you know, a backhanded way of America basically creating the enemy that attacked us on 9/11. So it's not surprising that we had to get out of there. I just wish we'd gotten out of there 10 years sooner. We lost almost 2,500 lives of Americans there, over 20,000 were wounded there, and all for what? I mean, the basic reason for going in there was to punish them for keeping Osama bin Laden there and the terrorists who brought down the Twin Towers on 9/11. And once we accomplished that, and once we had killed Osama bin Laden, I think it was time to get out of there. I think yesterday, H.R. McMaster, who was the National Security Advisor for President Trump, said that basically in February of 2020, Donald Trump basically negotiated the surrender of the United States to the Taliban, and that in essence, that sort of laid the framework for what Biden had to do to get us out of there. So there's a lot of blame that can go around to four different presidents for the time we served in Afghanistan, but I think Americans are pretty universal in their agreement that it was time to get out.
What do you think?
Could we have gotten out a little more smoothly? I wish we had, but,
John, what do you think?
Well, the issue isn't whether we got time to get out. I agree with Jeff. We should have gotten out 10 years ago. The issue is how we got out, and it's been a disaster. I mean, to pull out, for Biden to pull out the troops and abandon our equipment before he got all the civilians out, both Americans and our Taliban or our Afghan friends, the British have described that as imbecilic. The British Parliament has held him in contempt in a formal vote. He didn't bother to even notify our NATO allies. He's created a disaster. Not only today, we may not get all the Americans out, to say nothing of our Afghan friends, but it has resulted in a humiliation of the American as the world's greatest superpower. And it has raised questions whether we will stand behind our positions. Biden should have simply removed Americans and our Afghan friends before he removed the troops. It is just stupid. There's no other way. The guy is a disaster. He's incompetent. He's inept. And I am so tired. I got to tell you, the summary of it is, I'm so tired of being lied to by dishonest politicians, and the spin and the lies and the incompetence of this administration. I am so tired of it. They are incompetent. They lie. They have created an international humiliation bigger than Vietnam.
How about Jeff's contention that when it comes to foreign policy, Americans usually don't, that's not at the top of the list.
That's a political issue. That's classic for the Democrats. They weigh everything, not in whether it's right or wrong, mm-hmm. but how's it going to affect their political power? Mm-hmm. That's what they're into.
How do you think it will, John?
Oh, I don't think Americans are going to forget this international humiliation. I agree that most Americans generally vote on economic issues, but I'm not very interested in how this affects voting in the future. I think the issue is a big issue. I'm more concerned about what's right and what's wrong.
Jeff.
And what has happened here is just imbecilic, as Tony Blair, the labor leader in Britain, called it, imbecilic. It's crazy.
Yeah, one thing I do agree with you on, John, is that we should never have left all that equipment just sitting
how about
out
the,
there.
How about the Americans?
Yeah, I mean, just,
well, I mean, how do you how do you pull the troops out before the Americans are out safe?
Well, here's the the problem with the equipment. We were misled by basically the entire military bureaucracy to believe that these Afghan soldiers would stand up and defend their own country, and that turned out to be entirely wrong and was a complete and total intelligence failure. And there were some a few people howling in the wilderness that were basically saying that'll never happen. This is a tribal place. It's isolated, and they're never going to stand up for themselves, and they'll, you know, fall like a wet paper bag. But the, you know, we were led to believe by our own intelligence that that these people would stand up, and that's why the equipment was left there for them to defend themselves and for them to operate that equipment as part of the Afghan armed services. I don't think anybody really believed that they would fold as quickly as they did, and it was shocking the way they folded in just a few days. It took them less than 9 days to basically take over the entire country, and I think that most people and most people in the military intelligence were saying, oh no, it'll take 30, 60, 90 days, maybe even a year before Kabul will fall. And of course, it fell virtually overnight. Yeah. So I think that there's a little bit of intelligence failure that we can blame on every administration that was part of this. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, 2,500 men and women in our armed services gave their lives for this country, and 20,000 more were wounded, and all for nothing, really,
seems. That's not the issue. The issue is how you get out. There were communiques from the intelligence people signed by, I think it was 20 or 21 people in Kabul, Americans, to the administration, to Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, saying, look, if we pull out the troops, this place will fall almost overnight. And Tony Blinken admitted he didn't even read the communique. This is, you never, ever pull out your troops, American troops, until your people are safe.
And well, tell that to Donald Trump. He pulled out almost all of the troops.
No, he
leaving
didn't.
leaving a bare minimum number of troops left after Trump left the White House.
He left. He had 2,500 troops in there when Biden took over.
But and there were 10,000 of them before Trump took the presidency.
And that's part of getting out, is getting the number of troops down. But you needed 2,500 troops to hold Bagram Air Base and to provide the intelligence and the protection and provide intelligence to the Afghans, which we've now withdrawn. We've withdrawn the Air Force. Okay. And Biden did all that. That is not Trump. Quit trying to blame it on somebody else. This is Biden's watch. If Biden didn't like what Trump was doing, Biden's the president. He should have tweaked it. Okay. He didn't. He tweaked it the wrong way. He pulled out. The guy is stupid.
All right, John. And Jeff, we'll take a pause right here. Be right back on our Monday Political Face-Off. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
The Buckmaster Radio Program is paid for by Buckmaster Communications, LLC. The views expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI, Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or their sponsors.
Welcome back. It is our Monday political face-off. We have Jeff Rogers and John Munger with us for our face-off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Let's talk a little bit about what you think, John and Jeff, about the political damage of this to Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. John Munger.
Well, I agree with Jeff that Americans traditionally focus on economics. But Biden ran as the adult in the room, the so-called competent guy. Who could make solid decisions. He clearly cannot make solid decisions. This was a disaster. We're now in a position where everybody understands next time we get into a fight militarily and we go to our NATO allies and say, oh, please help us, what are they going to say? Last time we helped you, you pulled out on us and you didn't even tell us. You didn't even tell us that you were leaving. You just left America. Why would our allies ever work with us again? And I think Americans are not stupid. They get it. They are going to punish the Democrats for the lies and the spin and the constant misrepresentations and misinformation, and they're tired of it. I'm tired of being lied to. I'm tired of being spun at. And I think Americans are going to, I think it's going to be a landslide election in favor of the Republicans.
In 2022. What do you think, Jeff?
I don't think so. I'm more worried about that Republican gerrymandering than I am about this.
The redistricting?
Yeah, the redistricting process. That concerns me a great deal in states that are controlled by Republicans, and the amount of gerrymandering they'll involve themselves in. That worries me a lot more than this. Fully 60 to 70% of Americans agree that we should have gotten out of Afghanistan and still agree this was the time to get out.
That is the issue.
Could it have gone a little bit better? Yeah.
A little bit?
This is a You know, this is basically a tribal country, you know, that is still quite primitive in the, when you get outside of Kabul. And, you know, we should have been better informed. And I think that what Biden needs to do is some heads need to roll. I mean, a president makes decisions based upon the input he gets. And obviously some of the input he got from some of the military brass and maybe from the State Department was bad information. I mean, for him to go in there and pull out with the belief that that the Afghan army would stand up for itself and hold that country was a belief that was shared with Biden from a lot of different sources, and it turned out to be patently wrong.
Big time heads rolling.
Yeah, I think some heads should roll. You can't, you know, a president only can make decisions based upon the input he has, and if the input he had was bad, then the people who gave him that input need to go.
The general staff have said, we told him not to do it this way. We told him not to remove the troops before the Americans were out. Biden was asked the question, well, did they tell you that? And he said, I can't recall. He didn't deny it. The general staff told him this. This is Democratic spin, more spin, to try now to blame it on the military. This is not a military problem. This decision was made at the top. The head that should roll is Joe Biden's.
All right, let's quickly switch gears, John and Jeff. Congress is back in session, the $3.5 trillion spending blueprint. Is this in trouble, Jeff Rogers, the infrastructure plan?
It's going to be a close call. I mean, they're going to have to line up all of the votes for this, and I don't think we're going to see any Republican support at all.
Because of perhaps the sharp divisions in the Democratic caucus.
Yeah, and it's going to be difficult for the Democrats to hold together 50 votes in the Senate. I don't think Nancy Pelosi will have trouble. I mean, she's a tremendous leader, and you know, she'll get it through the House, but I worry about it getting through the Senate. I think you know, it Joe Manchin and even our own Senator Sinema is are problematic. And so, you know, if they can pull those two votes and make it a 50-50 bill, then Kamala Harris breaks the tie and it makes it through. But it's going to be a tough one. And there are people in the House and the Senate, Democrats, who are saying, you know, we won't vote for this other infrastructure bill if we don't get this budget package passed. And this budget package is, you know, kind of, it's going to be delicate.
And there are Democrats even in the House. I think it's 9 of them. They only have a margin of 4 or 5. There's 9 so-called moderate Democrats who've said to Nancy Pelosi, we aren't going to vote for this if you attach it to another $3.5 trillion. And she's trying to hammer them. I'm not sure they can get it through the House. We'll have to see. And I'm also, I join Jeff, I'm not sure they can get it through the Senate either. The bill is a hoax in terms of infrastructure. Only about half of that bill is traditional infrastructure. The rest of the spending is all, it's a Democratic pork barrel bill. And that's why the Republicans aren't going to vote for it. A clean infrastructure bill should be about $600 billion.
Which we need infrastructure.
That's fine, well, yeah, but we don't need the extra $600 billion dollars in this Democratic pork that they put in this bill. And so that's the problem. The problem is they're trying to sell us a pig and a poke. They've stacked the bill with all kinds of pork barrel stuff. And it's only about half of its infrastructure. I don't know whether it's going to pass or not. I join Jeff in that. It's going to be a tight call.
Too many goodies?
I don't think there's too many goodies in this. There's a lot of things that are not traditional infrastructure like roads and bridges and, you know, but there's a lot of what I call human infrastructure included in this bill that will, you know, help care for the elderly, it'll help care for the disabled, that child tax credits makes them permanent.
Some internet upgrades.
Internet upgrades, the kinds of things we don't usually think about, but you know, people in rural areas are locked out of the internet. I mean, it's abysmal, and it's actually causing population decreases from rural areas in America. People figure, you know, I can't work in this small town because I don't have high-speed internet, and high-speed internet is absolutely essential today. And so those kinds of things are not what we used to think of as infrastructure, but they are now.
The expansion of broadband into rural communities is not part of the debate. The Republicans agree with that. So Jeff talking about it, that's a straw man. That nobody disagrees with that. That's not what the pork barrel stuff I'm talking about. I'm talking about all the spending for more welfare, more spending, more of everything that the Democrats want. It's about half the bill. If for a clean infrastructure bill, including broadband, it would cost about $600 billion. But the Democrats want to spend double that. And the rest of it is pork barrel Democratic spending.
Well, I'd rather spend money on people and infrastructure and human infrastructure than I would to give tax cuts to the richest 1%, which is what the Republican policies were, and that's how we got in the situation we're in now. And we need to rescind those tax cuts and spend them on making this country a better place to live for the average folks that live in this country, not the wealthiest 0.1%.
Here we are, tax and spend, tax and spend. We're back to the old Democratic mantra of tax and spend. The fact of the matter is, this bill spends money that we don't have. We're going to have a much larger debt. We're already over $28 trillion, which is almost twice the size of the whole U.S. economy.
All right.
And we don't have that money to spend.
All right, John and Jeff, thank you very much.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Hope
to be
you
here.
Both have a great week. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing since 1985 presents our Monday Political Face-Off. We thank Moe and his family. They've got everything you need, not only to take care of all of the beautiful framing work that they do, but custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and they'll come out and actually take care of all your hanging services. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Be right back.
Imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, 13-acre site. They've been in business a long time. In their 51st year, they are open daily at 3384 East River Road. And this would be kind of an excellent opportunity as we are in between maybe some moisture coming back. So do some gardening right now. Put some fall color in the backyard as we get ready for the autumn. Green Things and Zocalo Village, all that merchandise, some of it beautifully handcrafted in Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, part of Zocalo Village, greenthingsaz.com, and zocalovillage.com, the website. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Time to welcome Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate, who was with us as we, kind of began the summer monsoon season, and now he is back and a lot to talk about. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at Arizona Institutes for Resilience. Arizona Institutes for Resilience, known as AIR, coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, student, and has all sorts of projects across the University of Arizona's campus, from climate change to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Zach, good to see you.
Hi, Bill. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
When you were last here, you were talking about kind of a fun little thing about predicting, letting the public predict what kind of a monsoon we would have. How did folks do for July?
Well, where to begin? I mean, July was absolutely bananas. Mm-hmm. Here in Tucson, I know July broke the all-time wettest month on record. The monsoon just did not quit. It came on time. And it's been relentless up until about 5 days ago. So I think I came on right before late June, I think it was.
Yeah, and to announce this contest.
Yeah, we set up this game because mm-hmm. everybody wants to know what the monsoon's going to be like. And we don't really have great predictions because the monsoon's really hard to predict. And so mm-hmm. we built an interface that allowed people to make their forecasts each month at five cities around the Southwest. And we had something like, for Tucson, we had something like 260 people make their forecast, and not one of them scored any points.
What did they have to do to hit a point? I mean, could the one closest to the actual rainfall get a point?
Yeah, how it worked is you had to be within a standard deviation of the actual rainfall. And because there was record-setting rainfall, nobody predicted that high of rainfall. And so most people's predictions were a lot lower. And I think that there was actually some residual shock from last year where it was so dry that most of the guesses sort of leaned toward drier than average. Mm-hmm. And obviously this year has been the opposite of last year. So
it was not only the wettest July, Zach, but as you know, we're into the third wettest year, 2021, on record. And we're not that far away, a couple of inches, to the all-time record.
Yeah, it's been amazing. So we're talking
about... At least for the monsoon. I don't know about what it would be for the record year.
Right, and we're largely talking about what's going on around Tucson, but I think it's important to note as well that this has been a robust and vigorous monsoon region-wide, so not just Tucson, although Tucson's been the big winner, but Phoenix has seen above average. Flagstaff is virtually everywhere in Arizona and western New Mexico, and even actually eastern New Mexico, as well as seeing above average rainfall. But yeah, so for Tucson at the airport, the historical record for the monsoon season, so that's June 15th to the end of September, the historical record is 13.9 inches. Mm-hmm. We're at, I think we're at 11.9 right now.
Mm-hmm.
On average, September brings us about an inch and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had something like 16 Septembers in the historical record in Tucson that have produced more than 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Something like a 20. If you
so
just,
it's still in play.
It's in play. The record's in play, which is amazing, yeah. Right? I mean, let's go back 1 year, and it was the most depressing scene. It was a historically dry monsoon nearly everywhere. And I think we'll take it. And you mentioned the annual rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, put this in context, where not only did we have a really dry monsoon last year, but we also had a really dry winter. And so the pressure was on this year's monsoon to deliver for just putting back some moisture into the very parched landscape. And fortunately it delivered. And we're close to the yearly average just based on the monsoon.
Look at those numbers. I've got them in front of me. Mount Lemmon, 30 inches of rain. Who would have ever dreamed? Take a look at the Catalinas. They look like something out of one of the islands in Hawaii.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's just amazing. And
so much green around. I've never seen it like this.
These numbers, even the lowest was parts of the west side, maybe about 5.5 inches. I know that up in our area in the lower foothills, Zach, we've had unofficially about 17 inches of rain.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And I think what you're looking at, this is important because there's so much variability even at small sort of spatial scales that we need more numerous monitoring stations. We often refer to the National Weather Service because it's sort of the gauge we go off of. But
right.
The Pima County Flood Control District has about 124 real-time monitoring stations around Tucson. And so we get a really good picture of the spatial distribution of rainfall. And in some years, it's really spotty. But this year, it's been wet all over. And like you mentioned, there's places out in Picture Rocks have had 12 inches. Vail has had like 18 inches.
Mm-hmm.
The airport's close to 12. Obviously the higher elevations get more rainfall, so the top of Mount Lemmon has been very wet. So it's I think what we need to think about in terms of this monsoon that is different than a lot of other monsoons is that the monsoon activity has been everywhere. You know, most monsoons there's storms going on in somewhere, in some location, and you kind of have to go to them to see it. This year the monsoon has come to us. Like, we haven't actually had to move. It's been amazing.
This chart I have in front of me, the drought, of course, continues in most of the western United States, but certainly in Arizona, especially central and southern Arizona, we went from extreme drought. The next category, we dropped to moderate, then we dropped to exceptional. Now we're at severe, which is only one category above abnormally dry, which is kind of the lowest category of the drought. That's pretty darn amazing in 6 weeks to do that.
Yeah.
But it could also then, if we dry out and don't have rain and get these really hot temperatures, go the other way pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, you know, drought's kind of a funny index because it does matter what sort of time scale you're talking about. Long-term drought, like sort of water drought, like accumulates over periods of years. Certainly when we talk about sort of fire risk, it's a shorter term, or the health of like grasses, it's a shorter term. So there is these fluctuations, and a season does matter. And like you mentioned, that we came into this monsoon season in pretty dire drought situation. Exceptional drought across, I think it was more than 50% of Arizona. And now only about 5% of the state has exceptional drought. So the summer monsoon, the summer moisture matters, and it helps. But it doesn't help every single picture. And we will need a good winter, particularly when we're thinking about water supplies in Colorado River and Lakes Mead and Powell. Something like 80-90% of the water comes from snowmelt in the upper basin. So, droughts is an important thing to look at, and it depends on what your interest is. But no doubt that this monsoon season has helped. We should also say that, in addition to sort of the positive benefits, sort of stopping fire, when the monsoon starts. There's also been quite a bit of flash flood warnings this year, and in a vigorous monsoon season like this, has some of those impacts that the public needs to pay particular attention to.
All right. UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido continues on the Buckmaster Show. If you have a question or comment, 790-2040. Zach would be happy to entertain your question. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be going to the live line and a call or comment in just a moment, but first talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Dr. Zach Guido is with me in studio, UA climate scientist. And Zach, you were pointing out, and the chart we were looking at indicates as well that over in Silver, they've had a lot of rain too, over in the Gila National Wilderness.
Yeah, it's been a vigorous monsoon everywhere across the Southwest. So.
Which makes a great destination for our listeners who want to go over and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, which is looking really good. Start your planning at southwestnewmexico.org. You'll find out all sorts of tips on things to do and great places to stay. Dr. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona, who studies climate, is with us in studio. And on our live line is KG with a comment about the monsoon. Go ahead, KG.
I wanted to tell you about an interesting phenomena that I discovered this spring. When the overnight temperature would get as low as 40, I could make ice out of Vail. I live at Vail. And the way I did it is I had a plastic tub about 18 inches by 24 inches. I put 2 inches of water in it, set it on a foam pad to insulate it from the ground, and the humidity was so low that as the water evaporated, it would lower the temperature, and I could literally create a layer of ice half inch thick if the temperature would get down around 40. Easier if it got down to 36 or 37, but above 40, it wouldn't quite make ice. And I think you understand the principle, and I wanted to get your opinion of that.
Wow, sounds like an interesting science experiment. Go ahead, Zach.
It is. Yeah. I'm not sure I do know the principle behind that offhand. I think maybe you'll need to come in and give a guest lecture for me.
Yeah, because that sounds like something that might be talked about in science class. All right, Zach, getting back to the likelihood of a change in the oscillation in the Pacific between La Nina and El Nino, we're now pushing toward La Nina. What does La Nina generally mean for us?
Yeah, so we always, as climatologists, we sort of always look to El Nino or La Nina as predictions for what's going to happen, particularly in the wintertime. And it's basically changes in the sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific Ocean, and those changes then affect the sort of atmospheric flow in the winds aloft. And La Nina tends to bring us here in the Southwest on average drier conditions. So it's not always drier, but the odds, the during La Nina events, there's more times when rainfall here in the Southwest is below average than it's above average. So we say that it sort of tips the scale and gives us greater chances for below average average rainfall. So unfortunately, it's, you know, we like to see La Nina, which does the other thing. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. Right now, a La Nina is the most likely outcome.
And these charts indicate September through November warmer and drier, so maybe that has something to do with La Nina.
Yeah, I mean, the temperature outlooks, largely what's driving that are trends. And trends sort of poke through natural year-to-year fluctuations, natural climate variability. And those temperature trends are pretty robust. You see them everywhere. That's the global climate change signal, the human-caused climate change signal that that people talk about, that was in the news again. Well, it's been in the news for many consecutive days, but the International Governmental Panel on Climate Change just released its sixth assessment report, talking about the synthesis of climate change science, and you know, one of the main robust conclusions of all of the body of scientific work is that it's getting warmer. And it's getting warmer in virtually every place globally.
So. All right. A listener asks, Zach, where do the monsoons come from? Do they come from the Gulf of California, or do they come from, say, Southern California, whatever?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The monsoons, it's basically defined by a shift in the wind direction. And so normally, like during the winter, we're under sort of westerly flow. The storms come in off the west coast. During the monsoon system season, what ends up happening is you get this big climatological feature, this ridge of high pressure that starts marching north from Mexico into southern parts of the U.S. And it does that because during the summer, the sort of position of the sun, the angle increases or decreases rather, and it warms up the surface of the land, and that ridge sort of marches north. And as it does so, it allows moisture to creep in from the south, and it also shifts the direction of the wind. So when the high pressure ridge is to our north, so north of Tucson, say, for example, we're actually under easterly flow or southeasterly flow. So there's a change in wind direction, and importantly, it allows moisture to seep in from Mexico, basically. And so the real vigorous part of the southwest monsoon is in sort of in northern Mexico, and Arizona and southern Arizona and New Mexico are on sort of the northern fringes of the monsoon system.
It looked like that the southwesterly winds were pushing a lot of the July rain.
Southwesterly
coming up from Sonora and the Gulf of California.
Yeah. So what was amazing about this year so far, up until the last 5 days, was that position of that ridge that mm-hmm. I just talked about mm-hmm. was in a really favorable location. So it was north of us, northwest of us, northeast of us, but it was persistently north of us, and it allowed us to get depending on its location, if it was slightly to the east, we would be under more southeasterly flow. If it was more to the west, it would be under a slightly different flow. But basically, it had been in a favorable location north of us, and that was almost near persistent throughout the first, 50 days of the monsoon. So, and now, you know, the break that we've had recently, the last 5 days or so, mm-hmm. that position has sort of broken down, and we've had more westerly flow, a trough moved in from the west coast and sort of beat back that position of the ridge, and we've been under drier air consequently.
A westerly is usually typical of a drying wind.
That is
for our area.
That's correct, and mm-hmm. it's very characteristic. We get these troughs that move through in September and can really cause drying out, but also provide some dynamics that can, if there's moisture around, create some rain too.
Common question always comes up when we have a very good rainy year. What does it do to the groundwater table? It's not, I'll let you answer the question.
Yeah, I think it helps. Typically, it's also at the peak of the heat season, and so mm-hmm. the evaporation and transpiration is ramped up. So, the wetting of the soils doesn't recharge the groundwater as much as, say, a winter rain does. But mm-hmm. just looking down at the streams of Santa Cruz, Rieto, for example, they've been running consistently, mm-hmm. and that's going to recharge the local aquifers. Obviously, in terms of groundwater, it probably doesn't help all that much in the big scheme of things. But it's certainly in a year like this year, I would say that it's not a trivial amount of groundwater recharge.
All right, we'll bring you back in October, and we'll see how it all played out as we end the monsoon officially. The summer rainy season officially ends September the 30th, begins June 15th. So far, a terrific season. And who knows, when we talk to you next, it may be the wettest summer rainy season on record. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. I'd like to see that.
Fingers crossed for that,
all right.
Bill, for sure.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Zach Guido. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Guido and John Couch, Engineering and Producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Dave Ramsey's very popular show about your money is coming up here on KVOI. Hope you have a great afternoon.